You went to work in 51 for
51 to 59.
Well, there was one marshal, and then he had a group of deputy marshals under him. Lots of people don't realize the distinction between marshal and deputy marshal.
No, I didn't know.
The deputies, there were come on the civil service, and the marshal was a political appointee.
I see. Well, where did you
take this now?
No, I just know now.
Well, the state of Washington. Near Tacoma. That's where I was born.
I should say that this is an interview with Ted Lowell and Mrs. Lowell.
No, just Ted Lowell.
Well, you're both here.
Yeah.
No, I'm not going to talk to him.
Oh, you better get into it.
No, you know what? It was agreed that, not necessarily on one tape, but that you would both be very interesting to.
Well, yeah, I think it would be more interesting because I would leave out some things I know that she would think of, you see.
So, and this is also, in many of these tapes, Mike just set the tape recorder up through the evening and recorded laughter and conversation and comings and going and just let it run. And this is not for any official purpose. This is the Pioneers and the Historical Society are going to put these in the archives for future any future research that anyone would want to do. So it's an informal sort of thing. It's not really a formal interview, except that it's nice to know who you are and that we're in Fairbanks and it's the first of July today.
First of July, yes.
And I'm in the woods. And, gee, look, the sun shining weather is not like 60 below. You came from Tacoma.
Yes.
And when did you come to Alaska?
1926.
You did?
It was in, we landed here in May, wasn't it? Yeah, I gotta get her confirmed. Yeah, it was in May.
And where did you go first?
Well, stayed right here at Fairbanks.
You came right to
Fairbanks. And we've lived here, made this our headquarters here ever since. But I've been worked out of here and all over the country. I first went to work for the FE company. The job I had, it was on that office building that they have on me right now. I worked on that and we finished the building and I hung around for a few days looking for a job out in the creeks or something with the same company and couldn't get it. So I went to work for the Independent Lumber Company. And I worked there for just a week. And I got a better job. At least I'd say a job that I liked better. Driving truck on the Richardson Highway to Big Delta, hauling freight and mail. And I stayed
with. Trucks were running then, before the 30s. In the 20s, then trucks were running.
Yeah. We used Model T Fords. And then we, the last year, we got into a Model A. And there was a lot of freight moved out to Big Delta, principally going up the river to the traders, and none of it come in from the valleys at all. All come in over
the
come in over the railroad, and then we haul it out from here. So I stayed with that for a couple of years, and then I bought my own trucks and went into the freighting business. Two trucks, yes.
You might like to see that famous truck.
And
you went to work for the marshal's office
for
when
did that?
It
was in 51.
I see.
Yeah,
so
worked there until 59.
Well, now before that, in what? When did you have a trading post?
I had a trading post. I bought that in 1936 at Healy Lake, and it was an estate, and I bought the estate. I kept that until 1942. I sold it and reclaimed it after another year or two, and I still own it. That's a picture of it up there, that larger picture of it.
Did they trading
post?
And you still own that?
No, I have the trading post there, but nothing to trade for now. All the Indians and natives there moved out on the highway. Then the highway was built in, and they moved out there to get mingled up with the whites and get jobs, you see, and and get some wages, and I was out of business.
So there is no village left now?
Well, very small. And, I just closed it down, moved everything out of there, and still own 5 acres in the trading post yet.
Well, Now, what was there when you first went in?
There were about 60 natives. That was the population of Healy. And it was all trapping fur. And that's primarily where it was a trading business. It just traded merchandise for fur.
Were you the only Caucasian?
I was the only trader there.
Hmm.
I had it sewed up.
But there was an interval there where you worked for.
Well,
those
yeah, there
before
you
then.
See. She thinks of things that I didn't think of. During the time that I had this trading post, before I got the trading post, I had worked for a trader farther up the river, 10 across Tetlin and Northway, the name of John Idikovich. And I worked for him off and on for several years. And I did learn the fur business by working for him. And after I bought the trading post at Healy, I still went back and worked for him periodically, you know, up until 1938. And, yeah, I think it was 1938. And I bought a truck and figured that I'd freight out of Valdez, haul my own freight from my own trading post. And by doing that, I accumulated a lot of other freight for the traders up the river, so I hauled their freight too. So I got into the freighting business again the big way, plus owning the trading post and taking care of that. And it worked out real good. But in 1941, the road was being built in the highway, and I see the natives moving out, and I had a chance to sell it. So I sold it out, and I quit freighting on the highway, and I worked worked for the Fire Control Service, the Department of the Interior, as a district ranger for this division in this area. So I worked there until 1946. And let's see, who went? It's about went prospecting. Went prospecting over in the 40 mile. I and two other fellows bought an outfit, cat, new cat, and summer's outfit, and went in there and prospected for 2 summers. And we made, just made our expenses, you know, done a little mining along with it. Made our expenses, and we had seen that we wasn't making any money, so we had a chance to sell that out, and we sold it and quit the prospecting. I come back, that was in 1948.
1948. You bought the Crystal Water Service,
didn't you? Yeah, I come back and bought out the...
No, it's 49.
49?
Mm-hmm. Spring 49.
Yeah, well, bought that out, and I delivered water downtown, just as they're doing now.
Delivered water?
Yeah. Well, such as they do now, they run them water trucks around. So I had 2 trucks going, and had a pretty good business worked up, and I had that for a year, but it was a tough work. So I sold it. And then I went back with the Fire Control Service and set up a headquarters for the Fire Control Service at McGrath. And spent 1 summer down there. I was dissatisfied with the country and the type of living down there, so I come back and now I'm just a little bit ahead of myself here. Come back and went to work for the marshal's office. But I quit the marshal's office after 6 months and went back to work for the fire control again. And I worked for them 6 months and quit and went back to work for the marshal's office because she was working with it. And the fire controller would chase me all over the country here and there, and half the time I wasn't home. So.
Oh, in 26, when you first came up here, you worked for the FE company. What were you doing for them?
I worked on that new office
building. You got the building, that's right. Yeah. And then you were driving truck, and in trucking, you were one of the first truckers in Alaska. Really?
Well, it was comparatively new then, yeah. And
then George wound up with two trucks, and you were amongst the group to haul the buffalo out to Buffalo's.
Oh, yeah, I leave out all of that.
Well, it's a good thing you're here.
Yeah.
Now, tell me about the buffalo when they first came in.
1928.
Yeah.
In June. And a bunch of us truckers got together, donated our service.
Oh.
And the federal government, they bought the gasoline for us. And we hauled the buffalo out to Big Deli. Took them all out there one trip.
You did?
Yes.
Well, with the other truckers.
Sure.
Yeah, the whole bunch of truckers. I forget how many there was.
Truckers? I don't recall that.
There must have been about 10 of them. 10 trucks.
And how about how many buffalo were there?
There was 20.
I see. In other words, you could haul a couple of buffalo apiece.
Yeah, each had two.
I see.
And then,
well, that must have been quite a sight, a caravan of trucks of buffalo.
Yeah, it really was.
Yeah. And at that time, that was 100 miles down there. It wasn't like the paved road today.
Well, we went out there in June, and some of the trucks got stuck in mud hole right in the middle of the road.
Mm.
We pulled one another out.
Buffalo didn't get loose, or?
No, they were in crates.
Poor thing, they've been all that time in crates, you know, from Montana. Railroad to Seattle.
I bet they were glad to get out of those crates.
Oh, yeah. Little skinny things, and about that, of course they were young, but they were just started. I guess they probably didn't have enough water at times, and maybe not enough feed, you know, being in the crates, I don't imagine they'd eat unless you got awfully hungry.
And then he was with them too, and Freedom over there with his own trucks, my brother-in-law, and he was Freedom. And when Colonel Olson put the toll charge on a ferry out at Big Delta. They called it McCarty then. You know where the bridge is?
Yeah.
Across the bridge at Tanana River Bridge, 90 miles out. Well, at one time, the manager of the Alaska Railroad.
I was going to say, that's railroad.
Well, Colonel Olson, no.
Yeah, I mean, Colonel Olson was railroad.
Yeah, Colonel Olson. He wanted all the freight coming on the railroad, so he got the Department of the Interior to put a toll charge on the ferry out here at Tanana River at Big Delta, which used to be called McCarty then.
I see.
So the truckers, they took the deputy marshal and locked him up in his own weight, what would you call it, waste station or whatever.
Well, they had a little house there on the
supposed to collect the toll.
Scales, a little house there, and they locked him up in the scale house.
Took the ferry and moved their stuff across.
They took the ferry and moved their stuff by. I wasn't in on that.
Mike Dalton knows all about that. She and came back with all the information I had. The day she looked it up in the Newsminer Morgan, and she gave me a copy of it. I still have it. Very interesting reading.
I was there, but I did.
Oh, she wrote it up then for the paper?
But she had it in one of the Progress editions.
I see.
7 years ago. That was very interesting. All the truckers got off.
Yeah, well.
They were slapped on the wrist or something like that.
They all come in town. The deputy marshal, well, he came in town and resigned after that happened. They took his guns away from him and locked him in the scale house. And he had only been working for the marshal's office a short time. And
that
he
was
come
long
in,
before we worked for the marshal.
Yeah, he came in town and resigned. And they sent Pat O'Connor, probably you heard of him.
Yes.
He was a deputy. They sent him out there. He got along with the truckers good, but he told him, he said, you steal the ferry and take your freight across, but when you get into Fairbanks, he says, you're under arrest. And they all, you know, appreciated what Pat was doing. They come into Fairbanks, well, they went up to the marshal's office and gave themselves up. And of course, they didn't do nothing with them. But that's the way that
they
went.
They didn't file any charges.
Yeah, they did file charges, and they were going to take them into court, and then along about that time, war broke out, and it slipped along. And in the meantime, the army engineers built a wooden bridge across there, so they, where the ferry was running. You see. They built a wooden bridge across there, and course anybody could go across then. But the toll was still on the road up until that time. And when the, shortly after the war broke out, they took it off.
I remember when we went to Anchorage in 49 and 50, my dad was with the road commission at that time, in the Anchorage area.
Mm-hmm.
And he was remarking on the cost of getting freight. The freight on the Alaska Steamship Company to the dock was the same approximately as it was for the wharfage crossing Alaska Railroad property onto the highway, so that it doubled the freight to go across the Alaska Railroad docks. And, I know that, there were a lot of concerned people down there at the manipulation by the railroad to stay in the red, to stay in the black, to make money.
That's part of the rumors too. It's both the will of the country.
Yes, This was what a number of the people who were with the road commission at that time were saying.
Well, the roads were tough then, but there was 35, I recall 35 trucks at one time hauling out of Valdez into Fairbank. And I was the only one that didn't have to use the ferry. I would land my freight over on the other side of the river for the traders that took the freight up the town onto these trading posts. And I was the only one that wasn't an outlaw in the whole works. They had a big sign up there with all these truckers' names on it. That was a thing. I wish I had taken pictures of it. I didn't. All these names on there, and mine wasn't on there.
And what did the sign say?
Well, I give the names of all these here independent truckers that were breaking the law.
Yeah.
Law breakers.
They were outlawed.
Yeah.
Tell me something. When you went into Healy, now...
We're not getting that Healy mixed up with the Healy down the river.
No, Healy Lake, I know. Down by Torrey Tetland. Yeah. Polk, out of Polk.
Yeah.
When Barnett, and you're not an awful lot after Barnett, I mean 30 years, but he was going to put a settlement on the All-Alaska Trail, or no, the All-American Trail, I think it was called, and it went through by Healy Lake somewhere. There was a crossing of the Tanana River up in that area somewhere, and then they went on up into the 40-mile country into Dawson.
Oh, that was at Tanacross.
At Tanacross.
Yeah,
at
Tanacross.
Was that Signal Corps, or...?
Well, Barnett had heard of this All-American Trail, and that's why he came up, originally when he came up with his load of goods to start a trading post, he was heading for that area, but he got turned back by the falls down here, the rapids, and so he came up here and offloaded his stuff, and then he left, I think, or no, he was here, but Pedro saw him from the hillside, so Felix Pedro came down and asked him to stay. But that puts me in mind, you were up in the country in this All-American Trail, did you ever hear anything about that?
I never heard that All-American Trail mentioned. They called it, that was a Signal Corps line that went through there. They called it...
there was a trade route, an Indian trade route and what have you. They went from Copper Center to Dawson. And
that was through Mantasta Pass.
Yeah, that was through Mantasta Pass and Ketchum Stock, Tanacross and Ketchum Stock and went on to Eagle.
I see.
And then it branched off there on the North Fork of the 40-mile, and one branch come down the good pasture and into Big Delta. There was a Signal Corps station there.
Oh.
They called that Grundler.
Grundler?
Yeah. And, well, they had Signal Corps stations all along the road, you know, at that time. Well, it was
telegraph station, sort of, were they?
Yeah. Yeah. That was in our time, too.
U.S. military, Wildcats.
Yeah.
U.S. military.
The first one out of here was 33 Mile, then Richardson, and Big Delta, down the station. And the next one was right near Isabel Pass, and Myers, and on down, well, I don't know the rest of them on down that road.
That's about it.
Now, did they go down on the Tok then, and they had some
down?
Wasn't there a Tok then? I was going to say, what was a Tok then?
Nothing.
Tok came about only when the Alaska Highway came in after the war.
Yeah.
So that huge big valley, that basin to the north of what is now Tok, that was where the Healy Indians roamed over that area?
Healy is much further.
No, Healy is...
30 miles
from here. By river, it'd be about 75 miles this way from Tanacross. That'd be by the river. Overland, it'd be about...
That wouldn't be so far over.
No, about 40 miles.
Yeah.
In other words, there was another village there at Tanacross,
was there? Yes, that was a large village. Yeah. Yeah, this fellow that I worked for, Johnny Douglas, he had a trading post, and I put in winters there, and so they would travel from one trading post to the next one, Tetlin, and Northway, that wasn't the name of that at that time, that was named the Besna, the Besna village, and Northway was named at the time that the road was built, and they named that Northway, named that after the chief. His name was Northway.
Oh, that is most interesting.
Yeah.
Would that have been, the translation of his Indian name, I wonder?
Northway.
Well,
because it sounds like
Captain Northway was the captain on the river.
Yeah.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
He was
there's an airmail. Aerial. There you are at the chicken. You've heard of chicken.
Yes,
this is the only trail it shows here. It goes on up into the Tetlin country. And that was Tanana Crossing. It was always called Tanana Crossing before the... I don't know who decided to call it Tanana Crossing. We never heard that expression for years afterwards.
See, this is a wonderful chart.
Uh-huh, it is a good chart. There's Mansfield.
They changed that name to Tanana Cross.
Good pasture. There's the golf mile. We have a little home camp. This is the Healy Lake Indian Valley, Healy Indian Valley. And that shows the training post on it, right? See, the training post is on the river, it isn't on the lake.
I see. Mm-hmm. Now, you didn't have a road up there, so how did you get in?
River and then the wintertime dogs. I know all the dog trails from here to the border.
He bought one of the famous country.
And now, did you did you go out on expeditions to trade, so to speak?
We just traveled from one trading post to the other.
You worked for Hajdukovic.
And
Hajdukovic had a trading post here
at Tanana Crossing.
One at Chetlin. And at the Indian village in Bedna. Let's see if I find it. Scotty, yeah, it must be here somewhere. It doesn't seem to be on this map, though. So.
Scotty Creek.
The Bedna River. Mm-hmm. The Bedna's right there.
Sure.
Indian village. That's where Northway is now. While the village is a little bit. About 7 miles from the village of Northway, it's right on the river. Northway is over in the flats. There's the Tope River, and Tope is right in there.
Yeah, close
to that. There's the old winter trail.
So quite a way to the north of where the village is. Hi, that's a fascinating map that doesn't show the highway on it.
There isn't one in there.
Well, I don't mean to get things out of order.
Well,
I
was skipping along here and getting way ahead of myself, you see.
But it doesn't really matter.
I'm glad that you did kind of go back there a little bit. And so
we
were
left the buffalo and the...
Yeah.
You got them in anyway.
Yeah, see, I completely forgot about the buffalo.
What other high adventures occurred along in that period?
Well, when you travel with dog teams up here and river boating, you experience new and strange ones
every day.
That was our only means of travel at that time.
Well, what was your riverboat like?
We had, there were just gal belt boats for hauling freight principally. And then for running around in between the villages, which we didn't do very often in the summertime, we used them little boats, kickers. Lucky Steers is around here now. But for freighting, no, it was 300 miles of a river from Big Delta to Northway, in the Besna. So we had to haul the freight all the way up the river that far. Not all of it, the Tanana Cross is 150, and Tetlin is 225 miles, and the freight got quite expensive at the time you got it up there by boat. Haul about 5 or 6 tons at a time.
What kind of freight?
Well, mostly staple goods and
beans. Beans and onions.
Yeah, all dry stuff. No fresh stuff. Very little fresh stuff. It might take a little in the fall of the year. Another thing was our mail service. We came to Big Delta by dog team to get our mail probably twice in the wintertime. Which is the closest point was 125 miles. It'd be from Tanana Cross to Big Delta. So I went over that trail a good many times as a young kid. I liked it. I was a young man.
Oh, sure.
The weather didn't bother me.
Oh, I think that was a great trail.
But training in them days was fascinating. The natives at that time were altogether different than they are now. And they lived primarily right off the country, the natives.
There wasn't any liquor.
Isn't that wonderful? Oh, yes, yes.
No liquor. Unless once in a while one might go with a dog team over in the Copper River. Two men test it, pass and down in there and get some liquor. Once in a while they'd do that. If they made too much money off of it, for they'd do it. And it was all trading up there, very little money used. I know one winter at Healy I traded all winter and I'd never seen two bits.
Now, what would you trade for?
Fox, link, fur, any kind of fur that existed up in that part of the country. Spring of the year was beaver and muskrats. And we traded for moose hides and caribou hides and caribou mitts and moccasins and all that stuff and snowshoes and anything that was saleable.
What were the Indians like then?
Well, they're much different than they were now. As I say, they lived off of the country then.
Besides being sober?
Yeah, yeah. You never seen a drunken Indian unless you come to town. Very seldom seen one in town. And there were, the older natives were nice people. They were nice to do business with. The younger one, as they were getting a better education and I might put it this way, getting wiser to the white people.
And then all of them.
Yeah. But all in all, they were.
At that time, now, you know, I was under the impression that the interior Alaska, at the Athabascans, were completely nomadic. But they weren't.
No. They had their village and established system. Much as a white person would.
They did.
There was the Tetnam Indians and the Besma Indians, Town Cross Indians, all Athabascans, but completely, they even had a little different dialect. They could understand each other pretty good, but they didn't really. I think mostly the Healy Indians had a little different, more so than the other.
Well, there was some at Healy that couldn't understand the ones, say, for instance, at Northway.
The Besma,
they could. Don't use that eventually figure out what they were talking about. But they, from Healy, couldn't understand the natives here in Indiana at all. Is that much different than that?
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Now, I had a conversation with some fellows that had recently come back from Gallup Indian School. One was from Minto and one was from Tetlin. And they were comparing who they could talk with that were Navajo and Apache.
Mm-hmm.
Because Navajo and Apache are Athabascan. But apparently there were some, they said they were standing in a line, you know, in a school food line, and all of a sudden they heard this language. They couldn't speak with each other. Minto and Tetlin couldn't understand each other but a few words. And all of a sudden they could pick out what was being said, and these guys were Navajo and Apache.
Some of those words.
Mm-hmm.
It reads all through that chain.
It seems to me that the Tetlin fellow could speak with the Navajo, you know, and better than he could with the Minto fellow.
Mm-hmm. Did the Tetlin Indians associate more with that up in the Besma?
Yeah, they did.
And the Scottish Indians?
Yeah, and the Canadian side Indians over at Snags. They may go back and forth across the border there quite a good deal.
Now, they lived off of hunting, and how about fish in the summer?
They had fish in the summertime, and meat, of course, moose and caribou. And what little, they'd make snowshoes and moccasins and stuff like that in the summertime. And our first trips in the fall of the year, when they got ready to put in for the winter, well, then we'd start to trade with them. They didn't have any fur, it was too early to catch fur. We'd buy up these mitts and moccasins and snowshoes and stuff like that, what they had been making in the summertime.
Mm-hmm. Did they have any kind of art besides their beadwork?
No, not today.
They made a few necklaces, something I could see in the souvenir shops, but they were never on a level with the Fort Yukon Indians that came to be there.
Is that so?
Not that I saw.
See, the Canadian, French-Canadian nuns came in over there into Western Canada, and beadwork, the knowledge of beadwork, I understand, came down the Yukon, Fort Yukon, the Porcupine, from Arctic Village or whatever it is up there. Porcupine.
Mm-hmm.
Old Crow.
Mm-hmm. Well, Fort Yukon has always had a reputation for Alaska and beadwork. Perhaps not it's the most, I don't mean spectacular. And I think the Indians up above did just put the things together the same way, but they didn't have the pattern, they didn't have the color that Fort Yukon Indians had. They didn't seem to have that grasp of color. Just any old thing.
Well, as much as this work right here, I don't know where that Fort Yukon is.
What about their clothing? Did they still wear traditional clothing at all?
No.
Well, once in a while they would.
Wasn't it gingham mostly?
Yeah.
They'd buy bolts of material.
Yeah. Would they wear for ceremonials or traditional garments at all?
Mm-hmm. That's leather, wasn't it?
Well, they had their moose hide coats and all their bead work on their coats, and they wore these here.
Dentelium shells.
Dentelium.
Mm-hmm, I see. Now, did you ever trade for dentelium or trade dentelium?
Oh, yeah, I handled them a lot.
You did? Well, now, where did you get the dentelium to trade?
They come from, in fact, how they come into this country was a fellow that used to own the Healy Trading Post. His name is Newton.
Newton.
And he was the first one to bring them in. And they come from Vancouver, off of Vancouver Island. And there's the only place in the world where they could get them, I guess. The way I understand it, and they were considered real valuable at that time.
Well, they still are.
Well, they have become valuable now, but...
Is that so? What is that, about a four, if opened out, it would probably be four and a half feet.
Yeah. You see that longer one there? What's that a hold of?
Yeah.
Well, that when I quit trading, the value of that was $18.
When you quit trading, it was worth $18.
There was so much of it in the country.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that there thing now, I don't know what it would be worth.
Well, it's gone up in value as an historic item.
Yeah.
Although you can still get new dentelium, but the old ones that have, history behind them
are
fetching the price.
We have a
2-pound
bumper
can. Yeah, full of loose ones.
You do, dentelium.
Well, that's what was left over when I quit trading, and I brought it in, into town. Brought them along. They'd bring stuff like that in, and if they were shorter for, and trade it for something, the flour or tea or whatever they wanted. And I ended up with some of that stuff and a lot of old guns and...
You've probably seen that. Perhaps it's taken off of the...
Oh, that's real interesting, the story on dentelium. I'd like to read that later. Well, could you take the dentelium from them and trade it to other Indians in turn?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I see. Now, the Eskimos valued blue beads. For various reasons, the blue bead was believed to have magical properties by the Eskimos. Was there anything comparable to that among the Indians here?
Only that there, that red one.
The red beads, they like the red beads.
Mm-hmm. You could just sell all kinds of them.
You could sell red beads.
Yeah, but any other thing you couldn't.
Is that right? None of the other beads.
No.
Yes, I see. They're all the dentelium strains.
Yeah, you can sell them the red ones, but it's sacral.
But you couldn't sell the.
But
the
others, they weren't interested in. Just like in the grocery line, tea. You could take any kind of tea up there, and they wouldn't look at it. But you take Lipton tea. That's the only tea that they bought. Lipton's tea.
Why? How strange! I wonder why.
Yeah, and another trader, he took a whole bunch up there and. He's going to sell a little bit cheaper than what the other traders are selling this Lipton tea. I guess he's got it yet. He couldn't sell it at all. He was giving it to him, and Lipton tea. Yeah, Lipton tea. And name another one. baking powder, royal baking powder.
Royal.
Yeah, only royal baking powder, Lipton tea, Star chewing tobacco, Black Bull tobacco, becomes a natural twist tobacco. And they follow along them lines. If you got anything else but that, you'd have it sitting on the shelf and couldn't sell it.
That's amazing. I wonder why. They got hung up on brands.
Yeah.
I guess it was the first one dropped to, and
they didn't drink much coffee, and if they ever bought any coffee, it had to be Hills.
I think they must have had a little background somewhere.
They didn't know about mountain grown coffee. You better put these cookies over here by you, because I've had my fill. That's my lemon right there.
Well, I'm starting on them.
Well, that's your share over there.
So those are yogurt cookies. Have you ever heard of yogurt cookies?
Are you really seriously right? Are those yogurt cookies?
Yeah, we get them in Valdez when we go down there.
No, I've never heard. They are just those.
No, White Horse, isn't it?
White Horse.
Yeah, that's White Horse.
You still have your Trader's connections?
No.
Yes.
Oh, you mean, I see.
Do you go to White Horse very often?
Oh, no, just on trips.
I was wondering how you came by the White Horse.
See, I come to there, her and her sister this spring. We come up on the ferry and then to Skagway and...
You hit White Horse about once every day?
Yeah, just about. I like that.
I do too.
Yeah.
I don't get over there that often. No. I've been there about a half a dozen times in Florida.
You've been over to Dawson City?
No, I haven't. That's a trip
That's
I haven't made.
That's an interesting trip. We took that trip in the motorhome
there. There's John Hedrick. You've probably heard of John Hedrick.
Oh, yes, indeed, I have.
Mm-hmm. He owned the three trading posts plus three or four caches out in the middle of nowhere. That was the Indians that... he's in the... Santa Cruz, I believe. This was the old big delta. There's the rock, and all the bridges now. There's a ferry across there. These are all mixed up. These are the boats, such as they.
I see they were, 15 feet wide or so?
No, they were about 10 feet and about 40 feet long.
That was some of the...
Now, they were powered. They were power stations.
Yeah. And
then decked over.
Well, we had canvas sides that were rolled up, you know, when we were trapping, because you had to be able to see, and at night if you had to stay on board.
Now, were these your old scows? Did you own the
They belonged to Hajdukovich.
I see.
And that was Town Cross. No, that was Tetland. Oh,
mm-hmm. Sure. But log cabins with log caches, they really are an Indian tradition.
Cemetery. The old boat coming up. I was trying to find a picture. You knew Donald McDonald, the father of the highway, didn't you?
Yeah, well,
we got his picture sitting between a couple of... Oh, he was a swell guy. We knew the whole family. We lived near his town at one time. That's how they got their lumber. You've heard of whip sawing lumber.
Oh, yeah, and that's whip sawing.
Mm-hmm. The guy at the bottom gets the sawdust in his eyes, and the guy at top gets a broken back. This is Town Cross. Taken from upriver. See the mountains? That's the Alaska Range of Mountains. That's 10 across 1929.
My, that is a fascinating
mountain. Donald Hajdukovich was going to teach the Indians how to support themselves, so he's showing them how to plant a garden. But that didn't last long. I mean, the Indians didn't care about planting gardens.
Now, Stan Young tells a story about how he taught him to plant potatoes.
He rented our trading.
He was the one that bought our trading post.
What happened?
And
the Indians left.
The Indians all moved out.
Oh, the Indians. The older ones, which is about 8 or 9 of them, just in a couple of years while he was there, they died out.
I see.
And there was a fairly good income from them older ones because they were getting welfare at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And it all went to the trading post. Well, after they all died out and the young ones, they all moved over on the highway. There was no more trading, so he said, well, he couldn't pay for it. He owed me $1,500 yet, so, well, I said, I'll just take it back then. Mm-hmm. You take what you want out of there and leave it the way it was when you bought it, and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
So I took it back I had filed on the property there, 5 acres. We have 5 acres of tapping ground there.
Well, this is one of the hazards of freezing up there in the river.
Oh, you're on.
Boat's on a bar
sweeper.
There.
On a bar.
And the sweeper's right close by to catch you if the bar doesn't. But there's exciting times on the river. It isn't all. Just
you're not
riding
just
along.
Riding along in open water.
No.
What do you do when you just try to miss the bars, and if you don't, you get
well, if
out.
You get a good stage of water, the stages of water sometimes will go down just in 24 hours, you know, drop. And if you hit a good stage of water, you don't have too many problems. But if you get a low stage of water, you're really in for a lot of work.
They sound water, you know, not on the bottom.
They sound.
Stick and put the stick down to the bottom to find out how deep the water is.
Mm-hmm.
Measure it, in other words, they call it sounding water. And if it begins to get too shallow, they begin to look for another way out.
Another
channel.
Yeah.
Did you ever get caught on a sweeper that was a real problem?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
One time when the engine quit, we had about 5.5 tons on the boat, and we had just gone over a riffle. The engine quit. Down the river we went, into the sweepers, and well, about all you could do with a load on like that, you know, power or nothing, just lay down in the boat and let it go, you know. And so we went on down the river about 1/2 mile or so, and there was a sandbar there, and there's an Indian on the boat with me. We got the pike poles out, and we pushed the boat and landed on the sandbar. And after about a day, we got the engine going again.
Most heartbreaking.
But there was, we had the exciting times around the river.
Oh, yeah. It wasn't easy.
Yeah.
We had that time.
It was swift water and shallow up to that part of the river, very swift.
I wanted
to tell you about the time that we worked all day to get through that narrow passage, two boats. Time that the guys got caught in the.
Oh, that was late in the fall. We had the last trip. It was ice running.
Took us 17 days to go a distance from the Big Dollar to 10 across that we normally covered in 5 days.
Mm-hmm.
But tell them about that.
Well, we had a tough time getting over this here one riffle. There were two boats of us. So we got this one boat over, and after a lot of hard work, and they got water inside of their boat. And then they got my boat over, the one that I was running, got that over, and everything was fine. It all started out so. Native, he takes a gunny sack and wiping up some water or something, throwed it out, come down the river and come underneath of our boat, and the prop picked it up. And of course we lost our power. And right back down over that riffle where it worked so hard to get over, you know, to start in with. But we had just had enough power to land the boat, and then we found out the problem and we got the gunny sack out. And
now, did you have to crawl down under the boat to do that?
No. No, it was one of these type deals on the back end of the boat that you could raise a prop up.
I see.
With a pole. Well, such as if you get in the shallow water, you had to have it that way so your prop would go up and down, you see.
I see.
And of course, the nearer your prop gets to the top of the water, the less power you've got.
Uh-huh.
And because you've got nothing to push on. But the gunny sack put us back down over the riffle.
It was so discouraging.
So then how long did it take you to get back up there?
Well, we got back that same day, back up. And but we bucked ice there for over a week.
We came in at 10 across, it was 20 below.
Finally,
it was?
Mm-hmm, just the sharp, sudden,
sudden freeze.
Pre-winter cold snap.
And these were wooden boats. And bucking ice.
I see.
The ice had started chewing on the wood, you know. So we took the tin off of the top of the boat and nailed it under the bow of the boat to shear the ice off.
I see.
And then at night we'd tie a log alongside of the boat so the ice wouldn't cut into the boat. But it just cut a boat in two in a very short time.
It could?
Yeah.
It's like a knife edge then?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We tied up there that night. And we decided we'd sleep on board. We had sleeping bags, of course. And the boat was completely filled up with trade goods.
Mm-hmm.
So we just stretched out where we could on sacks of sugar or whatever we had. And all of a sudden a log came down with the current. and went right straight through our canvas curtains and over our head, and I said, I've had it. I'm not going to stay on this boat any longer. We're going to get into the trading post, even though it was very chilly at that temperature, you know, and hadn't had a fire in it for months. So that was the end of that trip. It's a wonder I don't have more gray hair than I do.
Well, you had made it in then. You were by the trading post. Mm-hmm. You didn't have to up anchor and push on.
No.
You were on the
That is it.
Well, we hadn't. The other boat was loaded for tetanum, but we couldn't take it.
I see.
We had to freight it with the dog during the winter. This was the type, that's a better idea of the boat. He had two or three boats. Two of them.
Well, he had three. No, he ended up with that old Flanagan boat.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, this is a picture of a potland going on.
Channel crossing. See how they've got the poles?
And there's six or eight or ten cabins, and all along stretched in front of them is like a clothesline.
Bay blankets.
And they're all going with white.
And then they would have bolts of material, gingham, also that would be potlatched, you know, given away. And various other items. Of course, the blankets were the principal thing. That shiny. And this was another picture.
Oh, that's a side view of the Guam line.
And here are some of them in the costumes, you know, to see the funny.
And they do have half-tailed
hats. Especially leather. Those are leather jackets all trimmed up in the fur.
Now, I've never seen
pictures of that sort of thing. Of course, they got some better ones tucked away in there. Just got some of them here.
Oh my, and here's a cap. It isn't a cap though, it's a...
Was that part of your sawmill?
Oh, it's a truck. It's a sawmill, is it?
Yeah. If that's a... Yeah, that's a sawmill. That's a tractor that the tractor ahead of them.
Well, that was at Tetlin, the mouth of the Tetlin River, but this was your sawmill?
Yeah.
Is that what that is? The dog's here.
Oh, I took some glorious spills. They could do about anything they wanted with me. It's a bunch of village at Chapman. This is a bunch of the old timers up there. You've probably heard of the Rivers family.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Julie Rivers, that's his sister, Virginia. This is one of the guys. And Old Butch. Everybody knew Old Butch and Steve Long in the early days. They were trappers up there.
Is that right? Tell me about
him. Henry Stock, a little short guy, and he never washed, rarely.
This one here?
Yeah.
That's why he looks three shades darker than anybody else.
Probably. And Steve was very meticulous, and he was very much the gentleman, you might say, all the time. He read quite a lot, you know, and he was probably better educated than most of them.
He's a fine looking man.
Butch couldn't read.
No,
I could. Butch
couldn't read or write.
Fine people.
Yeah.
You know, this country, we're very dependent on each other, and the best seem to come out.
Yes, I'm
once
sure.
Once in a while, you'd find some renegades.
Well, to survive, you have.
Yeah, right.
Now, what, 5 tons, you see?
Yeah, sometimes the water was good, but a lot of 6 tons.
Flat bottomed and now a little dory on top.
Yeah, a little boat on top, too. In case they had to go out, and you've heard of putting in a sinking a dead man.
Yeah.
That's what they use that for, the head.
I see. You take and run ahead and
with a line, yeah.
A line.
I see.
And put in a dead man, and if we didn't have, find something to hook onto, you see. And then we had a winch on the end of the boat, and we'd wind ourselves up.
John was very good to us. He did a lot of things.
So what would you do with his timber?
Well, I just used it there locally. In fact, the first school that was built there at Tetlin was made right out of that sawmill. I sawed it myself.
You did?
Yeah. Three-sided logs.
What was this, 30 now we're talking about, 1930? Yes.
Yeah, it was in the early 30s. They were around 31,
32. Tetlin, 1930.
Yeah.
When you saw that.
Yeah.
And there was another very well-read man. He would take his National Geographic with him if he didn't take any grub. Dylan B. Fry.
Fry, yeah.
You've got Roy Lund's name on it. That's Dylan B. I'm positive. You won't get it tonight.
Now, here's something on the ice.
Well, remember that trip we told you, just got through telling about,
yeah,
when the ice struck us? And that was a boat that was supposed to go to Tetlin. So
yeah,
the next day they tried to get going and get out into the current and get it to Tetlin, but they didn't have a fire.
My gosh, and the ice is really thick.
Oh, yeah.
But I didn't know what it looked like. It's all crumbly.
Yeah.
It's like a sort of a cream.
Well, I suppose there may have been a bar there, you know, and it kind of stacked up.
Yeah, it landed right on that bar.
Mm-hmm.
It took all the natives in the village and
to get it back to shore again.
To get us floating again.
Oh, that must have been a great feel to live up there and work there.
Well, that's actually where you came up with, you know,
this guy looks like he's got a headdress on here. Was this some kind of a doings, or is it just a mistake in the picture? No, these two Indians, they have got headdresses.
Yes, they do. And it's snowing a little bit there, too, I think.
Those are those feathered headdresses?
Mm-hmm.
They did wear feathered
headdresses. Oh, yeah, they did.
Is that so?
Oh, yeah, they did. And when they had this particular potlatch, I'm speaking about the village that was giving the potlatch, was Tancross, and the Indians, some of the Indians came from the Copper Valley side over Nantasket Pass,
yes,
by dog team. And they crossed the river right by our trading post, that is John's trading post. And they stayed right there with all their regalia on, and they beat their drums and yai 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 stuff, you know, like the Indians do. And then pretty soon they'd stop, and then the village Indians would put on the same performance, and then we'd go back and forth, and then the visiting Indians would move up a little bit farther and start all over again, and they'd just keep going in stages till they got into the village.
And they wouldn't stop and shake hands, they'd just keep it dancing and all mix up. Just
and you were 3 or 4 miles from the village, or
no,
what?
No, only about half a mile.
Half a mile.
Yeah.
So that they made their first stop.
They came across at the training post.
Mm-hmm.
And then they let them know they were coming.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
well, they started in shooting out about
that too.
About a half a mile, 3/4 of a mile before they got to the village. They started shooting, and
so
to let these, the other natives know that they were that close. You see, and
I see.
And then they didn't come in, and as I say, they wouldn't stop and shake hands. They maybe they'd never seen each other for years. You know, they just keep it dancing and all mixed up.
It's all ceremonial.
Yeah,
that's the way they greeted.
Yeah.
They came together in the dance.
Mm-hmm.
Now the people in the village would be dancing,
mm-hmm,
and the people coming in were dancing.
Mm-hmm.
They'd stop and make a dance
and
move forward, and by the time they got together, they were
all dancing.
Isn't that interesting? No.
And then, after a while, when they got a little winded, while they'd stop and start to go around, starting shaking hands.
Then they'd start greeting.
Yeah.
Isn't that interesting? Now, would they do this if there were several groups coming in? Would each group come in and do the same thing until they were all together?
Yeah. Yeah, from different sections of the country, every village represented itself that way.
Mm-hmm. I heard something when I was in Hawaii one time. I heard a New Zealand Maori chant, and they did essentially the same thing,
mm-hmm,
but it wasn't a dance. It was that they would stop and chant, and then they move forward and repeat the chant or another chant or whatever, and move into the village from about a half a mile away,
mm-hmm,
with this songs, and they said because they were warlike, this was to let you know you're coming in peace, and here we come, everybody, you know, wake up, we're friendly, and they made a big ceremony on it. It was really a beautiful thing, these songs, chants.
Mm-hmm.
But it would probably be the same thing. Did these people ever make war on one another?
Well, not those local people, I don't think, but the stick Indians, as they call them, came over from the Canadians.
Yeah, they did it years and years ago.
Our Indians did too?
No, the stick Indians from the Canadian side.
But I mean, did our villages do anything?
Yeah.
Did they?
The ones in the north way, in the Besna country, did.
They warred on the Tenenbaum.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
And they still got that in their blood yet, you know, them. Some of the older ones. Yeah, they still don't like them stick Indians.
Uh-huh. Well, do you know where the name came, stick Indians? Why
do
they call
it? Oh, I suppose it was because of the Stickeen River, wasn't it? That's what I was associated with, but I have no idea.
No, I don't.
Probably too far removed.
It's just
not around Wrangell.
Yeah, right.
I think the Stick Indians were over just across the border, I understood. I mean, from, you know, what's now bordered. Yeah. White Horse Area.
Yeah, from the true, around Snag.
Yeah, Snag and Crew on the Lake and to that area.
what's his name? Stan told me once that.
Stan again?
Yes. He said that he had heard, he asked him why they called him Snick, and he said, well, they because they carry a big stick.
Walk softly.
Yeah.
Well, they'd go out some mornings and they'd see a snow, maybe a foot track in the snow, you know, something that they couldn't
account
for with their own Indians, and right away they started talking about the sticking and coming. Hmm. And they did already for trouble.
Whether it would materialize or not.
Whether materialize or not. They were there, but I guess the years gone by.
They had happened.
But out here, you know where the Aurora Lodge is?
Yes.
Right at the mouth of the, we used to call it the Salt Jacket, they call it the Salt Jacket now. There was the Salt Jacket tribe there, of course, I didn't exist. Were
there?
I did
grab
it. Yes,
that's right. Yes, that's
right. The mouth of the river goes into the Tanana. Have you ever been down there?
No, I haven't.
It's not very far from the Aurora Lodge.
Oh, yeah. It's interesting to crawl around down there.
They're down below the bridge there, about half a mile.
Yeah, we went down there 4 or 5 years ago just to see what was left. One white man with an Indian wife.
And that's where we used to cross when it was freighting there. About a half a mile down, they have an old bridge, and then we crossed there, and we had to go right to the native village to get across the bridge. They lived on both sides of the road.
That's where the old highway used to be.
They were generally a very friendly, hospitable group.
Oh, yeah. You know? Yeah.
No danger for
them. There is a way to send that thing forward faster, but we're about out of tape, and I thought I'd put a new tape on. I was going to ask you some questions about things that were in the album here. There's a
trip airplane there. The Winnie Mae.
Oh, this is
a different airplane.
Here's the Winnie Mae.
That's a Russian plane, isn't it? So we were looking for one of them.
Oh, yeah, that is Russian side quest.
We have a Russian plane for the last, don't we?
Yeah. Well, that one.